typically those are where the deals are. I think it's because of those, that size is where I feel is a sweet spot there. But like I said, when you get to the very bigger, the much bigger unit, like the 132 or something smaller, 15, 20, something like that, you're going to have different types of owners or a buyer, you know, buyers coming in. So I think that's just where the deals have taken us. But yeah, we're certainly open to something in that range.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jeff Drayson and Kyle Wallander, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The pleasure is mine. You know, this will be an interesting episode just in the sense that I don't normally do dual interviews. And so, you know, you'll have to forgive me as I make mistakes as we work our way through this. But this is tons of fun. I'm looking forward to really interviewing you guys, finding out more about your company. But before we do that, can each of you just jump in real quick and quickly give an idea to our listeners of who it is that they're listening to?
Yeah, Sam, thanks for having us, by the way. My name is Jeff Drayson. I'm originally from the New England area. Pacific Northwest is home. I've been there with my wife, three kids, and four dogs. Air traffic controller by trade, but my passion and future is in investing. These days, I'm an active investor, syndicator, and operator. And we've gone from probably about 8 units in 24 months, maybe or so. We've gone about 8 units to upwards of 130 pretty quick. And so we've had a sort of a big jump, and we're excited about where we are now.
Wow. Awesome. Kyle, yes, sir.
Hey, Sam, first of all, thanks for having us on. This is pretty cool. My name is Kyle Wallander, born and raised out here in the Pacific Northwest. I got my start in real estate back in 2010 when I bought my first house. It was too big of a house, so I rented out some of the rooms, did the typical house hack thing. And like Jeff, I'm also an air traffic controller, which is where he and I met. That's my day job. Like him as well, my passion is real estate. So I developed a couple simple little systems, got a little portfolio of single family houses and a duplex and then a fourplex, and then realized had all this equity and no cash flow. So sold that off, partnered with Jeff, and we went out to Missouri and started snatching up some apartments.
Man, that's really cool. I love that story. Before we get into really the real estate side of things, I mean, both of you guys are in air traffic control, which is, you know, it's a high paced, it's, you know, I doubt you're bored unless you're working some class D airport, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I doubt you're bored or standing on your thumbs very often. What was it about real estate that made you say, hey, you know, I think that's the next move?
Yeah, for me, it was just the control of time. You know, you position your money properly, it'll cash flow. You have, you know, a nice safety net in the equity. And it's just really, you're in charge of your time, and you can work hard when you want to work hard. And then live your life outside of that. With controlling, we're pretty set on our schedule with the shift work, and there's not much flexibility in that. So for me, it was definitely chasing the time and, yeah, just developing the systems to have that steady paycheck and the passive income.
Right, right. How about you, Jeff?
Well, for me, you know, air traffic control is great. It really hones in on, you know, I think a lot of my skill set that makes me really like real estate. I think I gravitate toward both of those fields because of my, you know, sort of how my approach and how I see the world and how I kind of interpret data. It's good that there's a lot of similarities and that it's very precise, especially when you're running numbers and you're really at the nuts and bolts level of, you know, the machinery of a deal or how you're running your team or piecing things together. So I think that level of detail really transfers well. And so I think it was a natural progression, but it really, to me, it became really from just really living beneath our means and realizing that, you know, it started just like bought a, you know, I had a single family house that I had moved, I lived in. And I was just by living beneath my means 4 or 5 years, 3 years, I think something like that. I was able to move out of the house, not sell it, and then move into the house that I own. And that was my first rental. Didn't know it was a rental when I bought it. And then didn't really think much of going into real estate until, you know, I started working with Kyle. And as I got to know him, we worked together for 8 years. And I, you know, as I got to know him, I realized that we thought very similarly and that our skill sets were good where I felt like we can merge together and kind of tackle this kind of stuff. So in terms of real estate and why not something else is really, you know, it's just you have much more control on your investment versus being in an index or, you know, a fund or something like that. And the other thing is, especially with commercial real estate, I really like the finite adjustments you can make to determine the value. It's more of a math problem. Versus, you know, depending on appraiser and what the appraiser says your property's worth is basically what someone else sold a similar property for. So I like the control, and it really to my bigger passions and my family. It just really opens the door for me to spend time with family, and it saps the systems and kind of let the system run as we've built it.
Got it. Got it. That's fascinating. So when you started investing in real estate with Kyle, Kyle already had some experience underneath his belt.
Right.
Awesome. How did you guys develop a plan? One of you has experience and the other one, you know, has maybe a rental property, but then how do you say, all right, we're two dudes, we're air traffic controllers, let's do real estate.
I had overheard him. He had some, you know, modicum of success, and I really liked what he was doing, and I felt similarly along those lines. So went into a, we said, well, let's buy a fourplex together. And at the time, it was a very big, I wouldn't say risk, but it was a big undertaking. And I took a loan out of my 401k for $50,000. And I thought we were very, I wouldn't say naive, but we just didn't know. We didn't know. So we're like, oh, the plan was, he put in, we split that down payment. We thought, oh, great. Well, this is what it'll cash flow, and we'll be able to pay, you know, ourselves back, and then with some profit. And really, we didn't even know how to value or run it. So we really, there's a lot of trial by error and a lot of mistakes, which really are blessings. And I think so the plan just sort of gelled as time went on. And you don't know what kind of, you know, organizational infrastructure philosophies you may need down the road. So the key, I think what me and Kyle both learned is, you know, stay on top of everything, you know, man the ship, make look out for icebergs. And you have to, especially as air traffic controllers, you got to be able to amend your plan, adapt, go with what's working versus and change out what isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How about you, Kyle? How do you guys feel like you developed your plan moving, getting into this as a partnership?
Yeah. I mean, I think I had the small portfolio and he had one or two houses as well, but we both had a common drive to do better and succeed. And neither one of us are really afraid to fail exactly. I don't think we even actually like that word because failure just means you quit. I mean, every time you mess up or have a mistake or setback, it's an opportunity to learn. So we were confident that no matter what happened, we could figure it out and just progress forward. Maybe not the fastest, maybe not the smoothest, but eventually we would get there. And as long as we kept that mindset, everything else would work out along the way.
Jeff, you mentioned this, but how did you guys kind of nail down what one was good at and what the other one was good at and then divide your skills, you know, appropriately?
I think it was just really the best thing we could do is, and we weren't really strategic. We were more tactical. So we didn't really know what plans we needed to develop in time. You know, we had to, again, this is an air traffic controller skill as well. I think you have a plan going into something. In this case, we didn't because we didn't know what the parameters of a plan would require. So the plan was to, like, we thought we had a plan, but it was more tactical, it was more adjustments. It was like, oh, this is what this is going to cost for that. This is what the rents are. This is how long it actually takes to get things turned around, or these are some things. So all those things sort of kind of marinated all in the stew. You know, you drop something in a crock pot, it takes some time for everything to absorb and to gel. And then you get the consistency and the thickness in this case of the stew. If we're talking stew here, let's say a tomato bisque, but yeah, so you kind of see, and then you taste it and you say, this is good, or it needs a little bit more of this. So you really, at the beginning, when you're developing that base, you don't really know. You don't have a plan. And we just knew that we liked real estate. For me personally, I love the fact real estate is the only real investment that I can think of. You're getting paid three ways. You're getting the debt pay down. You're getting the appreciation, of course, and then the cash flow. So it's the only thing, whereas if you have something in an account or in a stock or whatever it is, you take money out. Now it's decreased in value. This is something you could take money out while it's increasing in value two other ways. And it really allows you to not always just focus on cash return or just appreciation potential or just debt pay down. It's a combination of the three, which allows you to mix and match and see what works for each deal.
Yeah, I think that's super smart. Do you guys currently own real estate in the Pacific Northwest, or did you guys unload everything and say, hey, look, now we're going into apartments?
No, we each have a small portfolio here. Jeff has two houses, and then I have a house and a duplex here. And we sold off everything else.
Interesting. And you said, hey, we're selling off everything else and we're going into multifamily. What was that decision like? And then talk to us about that journey, getting your first deal done.
Yeah. So that was everything happened for us. That mind shift set, it was a quick evolution between, I'd say, mid to late 2019. I'd say mid 2019, it was like, we were realizing, we kept saying, we're going to sell this, we're going to do that. And it was just like, we were realizing how top heavy in equity we were on an asset that we shared. And we're just like, well, let's unload it and reposition those assets. And it was that we're like, well, we can't buy because we're in the Seattle area. It's very pricey. It's good to own, but it's not good to buy. And so it's like, you're really going to have to you can't recycle it. So this economy here locally is something that's dependent on appreciation and a lot very speculative because there's so much competition. So we thought, well, let's move out of state. And we had read books and we had done all these things, podcasts and blogs, and we went to conferences and meetups, and we did all the stuff and we did all the requisite things you're supposed to do. But when you're sort of in the situation, you're driving the car and you're like, well, yeah, I know someone told me the instructions how to get there, but I don't remember. You have to go with what feels right. But the thing is, it's being aware of everything that's happening around you. Know the details of what's happening. And that's the difference, I think, between being smart and being intelligent, is that being smart means, in my opinion, it's like, what you need to do. Being intelligent is you may not know exactly what to do, but if it comes up, you have the tools to be able to come up with the right fix action or course of action. So I think that's a thing that you have to have. So that was where we started. It's like, well, we moved out of state and we're going to do this stuff and we're going to build. And we have these plans and we moved out of state and it wasn't always smooth, but looking back, it was like a perfect arc for us. So we're really excited.
That's fantastic. Kyle, how did you guys select that market? Like, what was that process like, narrowing down the markets you're going to invest in?
Yeah, so we looked at quite a few markets and we ended up settling on Missouri for a couple of reasons. He and I both have close family out there, so that was a huge bonus. They are constantly talking about how great it is. And we went to a conference or two, and it seemed like when we were out there, everybody was talking about Missouri and Kansas and like that kind of area. And like, what is going on out there, So we did some research and ran the numbers and the rent to cost ratios and, the price to get in and all that stuff matched. And it's actually a really cool city when we went out there, and just everything about it fit what we wanted. So, and we figured, well, worst case, we'll go visit family a couple times out there because we have close friends and family out there, and go from there. And it's worked out. We've been going back ever since.
Right. And if I understand correctly, you guys have just recently closed out your first syndication. Is that right?
That is correct.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's tons of fun. Walk us through that deal.
Yeah, so that deal, I had my eyes on it for a while. We just having developing a network in the area, we were able to get some idea of that property coming available before that it would be coming to market. So we kind of just attacked it ahead of time. And we identified it initially as one of the buildings had to be a complete rehab. And we had it priced. We're like, okay, this is what we think the pricing will be. And to come to find out that we go to acquire it and the information was a little outdated, or not acquire, but let's take a closer look. And they had actually done one of the rehab to one of the buildings. It was, I think, 14 units in the building, and they had did it for 200 grand. The purchase price went up. So they wanted 1,700,000. And we're like, well, that's fantastic. A 1,700,000 and the property's done, very low price per unit. We had known that market. We had tapped into that market several times. We were developing some strategic partnerships to, help our overall development, expand our footprint there. And we thought this really fits. And we had a really good idea of, we can raise rents $200 a lot of times per door, reasonably within the next 14 to 16 months. And a lot of times you have to put in order to amount of capital in to get that. So in order to get that done, that quickly, we were excited, and it's been less than that. It's only been 6 or 7 months now that we've had it. Not even. This was like June. And, the rents are up almost to what we thought. We are going to probably almost, it sounds crazy to say it, but almost double the value of the asset in short order. And so that is a really good example, to point to for a first true syndication. We had done some hybrid stuff before, but that was our first, pure syndication.
Right. Man, that's fantastic. If I'm understanding the numbers correctly, you paid 1.7 for it and you've almost doubled the value of that in 7 months.
Yep. So I'd say right now we're probably added, I think double the value is more like we're extrapolating for the next, just once you get, a trailing 6 or trailing 12 with current rents, and just with the lack of deferred maintenance. But really, as of how it was performing today, is if we were to sell it today, I mean, it would have made, 900,000, probably somewhere around there. So I thought it was a sensible purchase, and it really sort of, bolstered our, belief system and how we underwrite and how we value and how we look at the numbers.
How many units was that?
42 units.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, on a price per unit, I don't know what that is.
It's very low, like I think low 40s.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah. 40 times 40, 1.6. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Low 40s. That seems really low. Was there anything about that price per unit that made you go, wait, there's something wrong with this?
Yeah, well, I think we go into every deal that looks even great. We always want to be skeptical because you really, no one's going to look out for us as much as we do. And so people want to sell their properties. And, you know, if they have a problem with it, they, who says they don't just slap a coat of paint on it and fix it? So you don't know what you don't know. And so I think we always trust but verify, or sometimes even maybe even distrust and verify. I don't know. So yeah, we did, but we had a proof of concept with another property close by, and we knew we had a reasonable expectation of what we had expected to go to. And we knew really, since all the work was just done, we had all the seller gave us great inspection reports, and they gave us, we had an appraisal that they had done. They had made a lot of money on it. Part of it is depending the, you know, deciphering what their motivations are. And that's part of the psychology of it. Why are they selling it? It's not just about the numbers. There's what's the other sort of latent aspect to it. So yeah, it worked. So it was great.
Yeah. And you bring up an intriguing point there, which is, why is someone selling it? I think that's one of the most compelling parts of any transaction. Why are you selling this? Like, you know, and that story can either make sense or it can shed light on some things that make you go, wait, this gives me pause. Like, you're selling this, something isn't adding up in the story.
And I think a lot of people gloss over this. It's part of the, when you start dialogue with the seller or a buyer or vice versa, when they say, we'll start the conversation, we'll start the dialogue, that's not just to start discussing numbers and spreadsheets. You want to get to know the people. You want to determine if you jive with their value system or their belief system. And if you can do all that, you have a reasonable assurance that the information you're getting is genuine. And it also opens up what areas of common ground. So it allows you, if something's not working, you can find some workarounds. So listen, I need this and this, but I can't do this. All right, well, how about you retain ownership? Or how about, you know, we do a seller finance for this portion, or how about we do this or that? And it allows you a clearer view of what could work and allows you to be more creative.
Right, right. No, I love that. That's very cool. So that was a 42 unit syndication you guys just closed. We're missing, you said you're now at 130. So we're missing what, 88?
A lot of units. Yeah.
Kyle, tell us about some of those other units you guys have. Like, what were the other deals? How did you structure them differently that wasn't syndication? And then maybe tell us why you guys moved into syndication.
Yeah, sure. So we unloaded the single family properties we had out here, and we had this stack of equity money we needed to place somewhere. So we did a 1031 exchange, and we bought our first 20 units out in the Missouri area. And we put a lot of money down. So we did just one 1031 exchange rather than a bunch of them. We put a bunch of money down. That was actually pretty heavy rehab. So we fixed that up, refinanced our money back out. And then that's when we partnered with two other guys. So there's four partners on this deal. And we bought the Kearney, Missouri property. We have a property out there. It's 21 units. And that was the money that we got from our refi of the 20 units. We bought that. And that's been just a great property. It was done when we bought it. The tenants are all paying on time. It's been fully occupied the entire time. And there's been no problems at all with that one. And simultaneously, when we did that, Jeff and I used the last little bit of our money we had from our other houses, and we bought a place out in, it's Merriam Lane Apartments out there in Missouri also, which is 35 units. And while Kearney's our best asset, Merriam Lane's probably been one of the bigger headaches out there. So we're just finishing up the rehab on that one.
Probably the most upside of that of any, which is ideal.
Tell us about the headache side of things. Sounds like there were some things in there maybe you didn't expect.
Oh, yeah. With the Merriam Lane property, just the plumbing, we knew it was kind of a spider web of issues out there. And we did the inspection and all that, and we kind of knew the issues that we were faced with. We didn't know all of those issues were going to happen at once. So it was just littered with plumbing issues. And most recently, the gas line issues, but we got those fixed now. So yeah, that's just to name a few. I mean, I could talk the whole show about the problems with that building, but they've been addressed now, thankfully, and the migraine is gone.
Did you foresee it being the problem that it is, or was a lot of this surprise?
No, I think you can touch on this too, Jeff. I think it wasn't a surprise. I think the depth of the severity was a surprise. Again, I mean, every building may not have some plumbing issues. Not all of them have as many as this one had.
Or concurrently, right?
Yeah, all at the same time. Again, like it literally, we had the inspection report, we read through it. Oh, it looks good. I mean, there's going to be some issues. And then bam, they all just came tumbling down at once.
Right. I think there was nothing that we didn't expect. We knew that the business plan called for certain items that we would have to address, but we felt like it was such that they could be staggered. Some sort of symmetrical CapEx infusions as we went along to implement the business plan for a five-year exit. So I think it wasn't that we saw anything that we didn't expect. It was that it all sort of happened almost immediately. But luckily, we did plan for it. So it's nothing that doesn't really skew the numbers. It just skewed, changed the timing a little bit. But it's also good to be on the other side of that as well. And those types of challenges is what you need to be dynamic and you need to, you know, adjust. So I think we'll be better off having gone through that and made the adjustments than having not had done it and not have had that headache. I mean, those are the experience that people, you know, need. You need to figure out how to avoid certain situations and how to plan. And those are all opportunities to course correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's not like you guys are finding a niche in this 30 to 50 unit kind of space.
Yeah.
That's also intriguing. How are you guys handling property management on these smaller properties?
Yeah, I would say, well, 30 to 50 is great because it's a good point of where it's maybe a little too big for the smaller buyers and too small for the bigger buyers. So we like that intermediate space also, you know, but just not this. We just actually put an offer on 132 units. We're looking closely at 152 unit. So those are out there, but the 30 to 50, anywhere between, you know, 30 really to 150 is probably, you know, where you also get the best loan terms, you know, just because you can, you know, depending on in terms of commercial, at least that's what we found. You get, you know, better chance for agency debt, those types of things. The other thing too with those is it's very, you don't have to make draconian changes to, you know, get a big, nice boost in revenue, like a $10 a month common area maintenance fee. So if there's 100 units, you know, you take that money, that's $1,000, and you can take care of the property. And, you know, that's a revenue booster. You know, something's very subtle, very benign sort of to the, and it helps improve the quality of the work that's being done, you know, where they live. And it's something that it increases the value. So it's something when you get to that stage where your economies of scale are just skyrocket, really, and you get more bang for your buck.
Right. Right. No, that's great. That's great. I love that. So you guys aren't necessarily using that smaller size as the, hey, this is our avatar product that we want to buy. That's just how it's worked out.
Right.
Yeah. I'd say typically those are where the deals are. I think it's because of those, that size is where I feel is a sweet spot there. But like I said, when you get to the much bigger unit, like the 132 or something smaller, 15, 20, something like that, you're going to have different types of owners or a buyer, you know, buyers coming in. So I think that's just where the deals have taken us. But yeah, we're certainly open to something in that range.
If you guys were to shorten your timeline, I know you guys have done this 8 to 130 units pretty fast. But if you were to say, hey, these are some ways we could have maybe even truncated that timeline a little bit more, what would you have done differently?
I know, I can tell you, I don't want to trash anybody in particular or any company, but I would say there are some landmines with, you know, some ancillary members of the team coming in that some of it, we'll say the property manager, hypothetically, but definitely, where we had a lot of rehab going on and we did all the things. We downloaded the questions you're supposed to ask the new property manager. Are they a member of the National Property Managers Association, all of this and that. But really when it comes down to, you know, when you're in the thick of concurrent rehabs and there was a lot of things that they didn't deliver. And it was like that, if I could have truncated the timeline and we're better and stronger for it now, our systems are stronger, communications are stronger, oversight, we're leading the property manager type, not leading them. I mean, just metaphorically, this is, you know, what we want. This is a vision. We're leading them to that vision versus us being dictated to what the property's doing. And so I think just taking control of that, you know, developing systems, oversight, communications, those are the big things I would have done if we could have truncated the process. I would have done all that. But again, you can't develop that mindset or that position had we not run into that adversity. So it's something you just have to do. You have to go through it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Kyle, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, just to piggyback on what he said, I think looking back, we could have brought some members onto the team sooner as far as the asset manager and some extra eyes on board to help us catch some of the things because we were so busy with the rehabs. And don't forget, he and I still work in shift work out at the airports controlling. I mean, we only have so much time in the day, plus family life and, you know, everything going on. If we would have brought on the asset managers and a couple other guys on board, they probably would have caught some things that we couldn't see. And that would have saved us 6, 8, 10 months. But at the same time, I don't know that I would go back and change anything because we're way stronger now. And without screwing up, man, you're not going to learn and get better. So, I mean, that's our story. Maybe somebody else would dodge it, but I honestly wouldn't really change much.
Right. What do they say? There's no such thing as failure, just feedback.
Yep.
I believe that.
Yeah. That's one of my favorites. It's like, oh, right. There's just feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys are stronger for it. Guys, this has been fun. I've learned a lot about your business. Tell me, what's the future? I know you guys are looking at some bigger units, but if you were to forecast and you say, hey, this is where Kyle and Jeff want to be in 3 years, maybe even five, what's that look like?
Yeah, man, for me, I mean, I have a huge goal of walking away from shift work and the 9 to 5, whatever, W-2, whatever you want to call it, and switch to full-time real estate, control of my time, spend it with the family. So my 3 to 5 year goal is to walk away and just keep buying up apartments. I think the deals will get bigger and bigger the more we learn. I mean, we're starting out on those 30, 40, 50 door properties. So we're also just learning too. I mean, that's a mid-size apartment, but maybe someday we'll take down some bigger deals, continue syndicating, get our names out there and keep helping people do what we're doing. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there who work who don't want to do it forever. And there's a way out if you put in the time and get your mind right. I think anybody can do it. There's nothing special about Jeff and I. We just took the plunge. That's literally the only difference. So
Right. Yeah, that's great. That's great. And Jeff, 3 to 5 years for you?
I would say for 3 to 5 year, I'd say it'd be a mix of a mindset and an operational point from a standpoint. I would say I want to make my, you know, sort of my internal goals and visions match what we're doing on paper. I really do. It's just an innate sort of visual reaction to want to be a positive impact on people. You know, I really don't remember the last time I've been in a bad mood. I'm very positive. Even when bad things happen, there's all kinds of good things around you. And you got to take hold of those because you got to use anything you can as leverage to propel forward. So I like being a positive influence and impact, helping people, whether it's tenants or investors or coworkers or teammates. You know, people on our team, that's the thing that's different about us. It is like a family environment. You know, we don't just work with each other. We work for each other. I want to help people on my team reach their goals, their personal goals, and they're going to want us to reach ours. And so we're all working toward that end. It's just very easy to be all in on what we're doing. So I would say I would like to do that. And I also would like to just continue to develop a portfolio, you know, build out, you know, new syndications, reach out to new people, develop pathways and communicating and just kind of put everything through the sort of the assembly line, team building or, you know, asset building and acquiring that we've done and basically reuse the lessons we've learned and sort of help others and kind of pay it forward a little bit.
That's awesome. Guys, it's been fun. Let's jump into the final few questions here. First one is this: if you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would say, again, I think it's important to make mistakes. So I don't necessarily think you should try to dodge anything, but if we were to do it again, I'd touch on just getting more guys on the team sooner. And you know, for our case, the property management arena kind of set us back a little bit. So have some backups in your pocket. You know, they say get 2 or 3 contractors before you get a bid. Our property management company had a contracting company. It was 2. It was the property management company and contracting company. So we didn't do that. We didn't get as many bids as we should have. We trusted the company too much and they, you know, they burned us a little bit. But at the same time, you take the good with the bad and you learn from it and you're better from it. So I think that's where it is. I mean, I wouldn't change anything. A mistake's a mistake and you learn and you grow and you get better. And we could have dodged it. But again, I don't think I would have dodged it if I was given the chance.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And for you, Jeff, any mistake or one mistake you'd help our listeners avoid?
I would say you want to trust the process, but don't trust the process. So there's been times where, you know, you have to immerse yourself in the process. Like, just like I always say, just like a restaurant owner, you have to know how to pick up the parking lot, you know, clean the parking lot, and do the dishes and the books and the greeting and the seating and the cooking and the hiring and the firing and the contracting. You have to know how to do all that. And it's the same thing, you know, when this, it's like, you have to know the process. You can't just say, oh, well, that's handed off to the title company and the property managers got this. You have to know how to follow up. You have to know what you're looking for. So I would say, you know, immerse yourself, set goals accordingly, value your team. They'll value you. You know, those are things that you can really do on the front end, you know, just to kind of set yourself up and really don't try to cram round pegs into square holes. If you feel like it's a stretch or something's not working, don't try to force it. You know, there's other stuff out there, you know, stick to your model, you know, and don't let, you know, making subtle changes here and there has a big difference overall. on what you've done to your business plan by if you start to make too many exceptions to what you're looking for.
Right. No, I love that. That's great. That's great. Guys, it's been fun. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
For me, it's Kyle@greenlightinvestmentgroup.com. Simple email. Shoot me an email. I'll be quick to respond. Ask me whatever you want.
Yeah. And same for me. It'd be Jeff@greenlightinvestmentgroup.com. Also, they'll be able to check out our website. It'll be www.greenlightinvestmentgroup.com. And you can reach out, kind of just see some of the content, say hello. You know, I always like talking real estate too. So it's just nice to kind of interact with people and say hi.
Awesome. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.